Hello there, I'm Tim and he's John, and this is episode 121 of the Van Hemlock Podcast.
Need a sponsor there.
Sponsor
you by. Oh, that'd be brilliant.
No, it would be cheesy.
Not if they're paying us money.
I like the idea of that. Money.
Money would be good.
Yes.
Hello, everybody.
Hello.
Yes, we're back.
They are.
And we've been playing games.
And we're going to talk to them at you about them for a bit.
And yes, that's all right. You have no choice. Except there are the obvious choices.
Well, quite, yes. Let's not present an ultimatum. We're not sure how that would go, really.
Oh, no. I've learned from bitter experience to never present an ultimatum.
Yep. I'm going to start with Warhammer. We've been playing that like we do every week. Every Monday, the Hipster Battalion. Very good. We're nearly done with Tier 2.
Huzzah!
I'm getting quite a little bit bored of Tier 2 battlegrounds now, actually, so this is going to be good. I think.
How many weeks was that?
Well, I don't know. I should have really been keeping track, I suppose, keeping check of our progress and all the rest of it, but I think we're quite familiar and quite comfortable with moving on from Tier 2 to Tier 3 now. I don't know how long we're going to be in Tier 3 for. It's 10 levels apiece, so, but you know how MMOs, the levels get longer as you go up, so.
Yes.
And Tier 4 then indefinitely from there on, but
it's okay, the XP expands to meet the levels.
Does it? I don't know.
It does on most games now, I think.
Yeah, we'll see. So, but yeah, I suppose I'm guessing about a month or two. Probably a month or so for Tier 2.
That's one day a week.
At one day a week of about 3 or 4 hours, yeah. So
what you're basically saying is there's 4 times 4 days of content.
I don't know.
Effectively, there's 2 and a bit weeks of content in the game, you're saying?
The game lasts 2 weeks.
Yeah.
Yes, that's exactly what I'm saying. Well done. No, we've been... this week I made sure that we all got... I've decided to have worked out the plan with the whole transition step is to just do it, just go ahead up to Tier 3 anyway. If you're rank 18 or above, you get the super buff and up you go to effective level 32 and away you go. Just having a good old blast like that. And if you're rank 17 or below, you need to stay quite far at the back.
Because, do not draw attention to yourself.
don't cast, don't attack, don't be noticed, because you're going to get one hit instantly killed. I decided we're just going to go for it anyway, rather than trying to split it up and try and keep 2 different nights of the week going and, you know, 2 different groups and having people graduating. And then the poor bugger who's the last person left with, like, level 17 or whatever. He's on his own, yeah, which isn't what this Monday thing's about at all, no.
Is that inclusion?
It's a big old mob we're just zerging about and having a good old laugh, to be honest. It's one of the few games and situations where we're free of the you can only have 5 friends ever, no more and no less problem. You know, you just keep piling in the warband and away you go. I mean, I don't think we overdid it on 24, which is the warband size. I don't think we've had more than 24 people in one night, but it was quite close on a couple of weeks, so... But yeah, just charging around in a large mob, and the game's designed to accommodate that, which is so refreshing. You know, you don't have to tell people to go away or sort of muddle through with a group of 3 and a group of 4 or whatever. So we went on a bit of a road trip this week. We went, basically ran to each of the flight masters for the Tier 3 war camps. Despite many of us not being able to get there by... Because if you get to, like, 20 anyway, it just unlocks them, and you can travel to them using the map. But you can run there on foot, and if you can tag them, even doesn't matter what level you are, they become available and unlocked for travel then.
Okay.
So, we went on a number of very long journeys overland, moving through the countryside as a big old mob, killing... initially killing anything we came across, and then after a while giving everything we came across a very wide berth indeed, and running like hell, and getting wiped a couple of times as well. Because we started to head into quite high level country.
There was a very, very slow helicopter flying over my house.
I know. Ignore it. Don't encourage it.
It's turning directly over the house now.
It doesn't matter. If you don't pay attention, he'll go away.
Okay. Yeah, keep going.
Right, yeah, so I forgot what I was saying.
I just want the listeners to know what that horrible noise
is. No. So you're not even going to edit this, are you? No.
They're hovering.
Well, you just look. Ignore the Apache gunship hovering at your window.
It's a Chinook.
All right.
hovering, no. looking in the window.
No, we lost it now. We're going to have to edit this, aren't we?
No. I
can't concentrate because you keep shouting about a helicopter that's attacking us. Oh, it's all right. It's going away now. Yes. There's, I think, Blackfire Pass, I think, is the orc bit. And then there's another bit in the dwarf. I don't know. It's getting used to sort of new areas and with new names. We're going to be very, very familiar with these after a while, I think, after a few weeks, because we've got a whole new set of countrysides to rampage around. We're trying. It's difficult. It's. I think there's some fundamental balance problem with how it's pan, how the various XP bars work and pan out. You can get Renown Rank 18 items at 1 pip, 2 pip, and 3 pips of... Oh, for God's sake. He's strafing us now.
I told you, it's hovering out the window. I've shut the curtains, though, so
that
it can't
help.
See in.
Yeah, all right, fair enough. That'll be all right when they... Oh, good grief.
Yeah, so keep going, keep going.
I can't keep going.
No, go on, keep going.
I can't think. I've been strafed by a helicopter attack ship. In real life, which is not something you expect.
I can open the curtains now, it's gone.
It's going away now. Right, yeah. So, yes, the XP bars. If you do any non-PvP activities at all, you're going to end up massively out-leveling these places before you fill in all the various influence bars in each of the lakes. I think, and also because each, I don't know how they designed it. Did they design it so that all three of the different pairings are continually garrisoned and in combat the whole time, because that's not what happens at all at tier 2 and probably not in tier 3 either, is that everyone just does a big old roving travel between all three, because you have one army that's trying to keep three different fronts down. And trouble is, each of these three different fronts has its own influence bar, and you're never going to fill that in if you're constantly working all three campaigns at once. Was it designed so that you were only supposed to fill in one influence bar, get to the top, and then away you go? You decide to pick which battlefield you're going to stick with, because that never happens, because two-thirds of the time you're not going to have any enemies to fight.
I think possibly they were expecting you to stay there and fill all three before you leveled up.
Well, yeah, but then that means you've really got to strictly limit yourself to PvP only. You're not going to go near any public quests. And I quite like the public quests. They work well with our large mob on the Mondays. We go around them. We've got enough manpower to get them done, and we get some quite cool
By
rewards.
Getting them done, yeah. You mean steamroller?
Well, sometimes, but sometimes it's quite hit and miss. I mean, if you've listened to the Kiasa cast, you'll have had this part of the war report spoiled for you. We did actually go back to the Archmage and kill him in the end. So that was quite good. But, yeah. So I've been trying to sort of work on two different characters at the moment. I got my Chosen and also Disciple of Cain, because it's just handy to have a tank and a healer available, depending on what the composition of the group is of a night. I don't think I'm going to be able to manage to keep them both going all the way up, so I'm going to have to make a choice at some point. Disciple of Cain, good solo viability class. The Chosen, I think, feels a bit more meaty and powerful when in a large group doing PvP stuff, though, so I don't know. And I'm a bit cack-handed when it comes to healing as well. But we've had a good old... we had a little bit of a run around the Tier 3 Talabek land over RVR Lank. I was 17, so I was trying to stay well back because everyone was absolutely amazingly purple-coloured to me.
Ah.
But we were still getting influence and rewards and stuff just by mooching along anyway. Most of us are 18 or above now, and I've set homework as well, which I don't normally like to do. Games should be about fun and playing when you like, but I'd quite like it if everyone can all be in the same thing, you know, from next week onwards. So level 18 or bust, basically. And you'll need to have that done well before the time you listen to this. So that's helpful.
I'll put it up tonight. Yeah. Some of them may hear it.
Whatever. We'll see. Well, they'll just have to come along at level 17 and try not to be spotted and killed, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, the keeps in Tier 3 seem to be a double-walled type of situation, which is different from the ones in Tier 2. Tier 2, it's just literally a castle with a front door, and once you bust through that, in you go and up you go and kill the keep lord. With Tier 3... looks like all the keeps have outer fortifications. So you have to do the whole ram business and the battering ram and the siege oil and everything twice for each keep capture. So it's going to take longer, and also there's more opportunity for defenders to push back, etc. I don't know. I have to see how that pans out. I mean, as it is, if you got a reasonable defence and a reasonable offence going in Tier 2 on the keeps, I did one this afternoon, actually, and it took about best part of a whole hour to break into the place. Very solid defence. It was the Barrack of Var, the big dwarf keep up on the hill there. And yeah, it was just push, 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 and they were pushing back, and we were trying to get the oil down, they were trying to bomb our catapults, and really went really good, actually. It was solid and satisfying to finally break through and get the job done at the end of it all. So, yeah, good stuff. Yeah, quite enjoying Warhammer at the moment. I'm playing it in my off weeks as well, off days, just to, mostly to keep these two different characters on the go. I think we're looking forward to Tier 3, and no signs of giving that up anytime soon, so that'll be good. Guild Wars I've given up.
Have you?
Yeah, I've just...
You've walked away.
Just walked away, yeah. Well, it's fun, but...
You've been there an awful long time.
I have, yeah.
Longer than any mortal is meant to put up with one single game.
I deserve a retirement. I've done my tour, yeah. And I shall...
Just hope they don't reactivate you for the sequel.
Yeah. Well, when Guild Wars 2, the all-singing, all-dancing messiah of the MMO genre, turns up...
One of the upcoming messiahs,
I'm so fed up hearing about Guild Wars. So yes, all right, it's going to be brilliant. Just shut up and get on with it.
It's going to be excellent.
Is that not the right attitude to have for a news-type podcast?
Yeah. It's going to be the best game ever made, as well as The Old Republic will be the best game ever made.
Yeah, yeah. I suppose they talk a lot of good talk, and they're... I don't know, it's got that sort of too-good-to-be-true feel to it nowadays.
What, like most MMO announcements have?
Well, yeah, it's funny, actually. No, but specifically in this Guild Wars sense, it's like they've decided they've identified all of the problems that go wrong with MMOs and are fixing them all with Guild Wars 2. And I just think, you're missing something. You've got to be missing something. And I think a lot of that is just going to be that actually we like the bad MMOs.
Yeah.
I think this is what's going to happen. I think they're going to go bend over backwards to alleviate all the things we bitch about MMOs. It's not going to be grindy. There's not going to be repetition. There's not going to be a gear grind. It's going to be dynamic.
It's not going to feel like an MMO, so people won't like it.
Well, exactly. Once we've they'll give us everything we ask for, and then we'll decide that actually that's not really what we wanted. I suspect we'll probably be quite annoyed that there isn't a grind and there isn't reputation and there isn't this, that, and the other. I don't know. It's going to be quite unrecognisable as an MMO if everything they've said they're going to do happens, so we'll have to see. But then Guild Wars 1 was never a proper MMO in that sense either. Perhaps we need a whole new genre. Maybe they'll be the ones to invent it.
We need to get rid of the term MMO and just have really, really large multiplayer games. I've said it before, I'll say it again.
I like the term MMO because it's short, easy to say, easy to type.
Massively multiplayer game of indeterminate number of people.
Yeah.
From two through...
Yeah. Do comment on the blog if you've got a better terminology, but I don't think we haven't come across one yet. So yeah, no more Guild Wars for, well, quite a while, I think. I mean, like I say, this is effectively free-to-play MMO that I've had sat there for...
No, it's not effectively. It is a free-to-play MMO.
Yeah, fair enough. And I can jot back in whenever I like. But the point is, yeah, okay, so we got all the big, experiments and debates about billing models and so on that seem to be preoccupying most people most of the time, myself included, in the genre. And at the end of the day, you've got to think, yeah, but is the game any good? And, yeah, okay, Guild Wars is good, but I've had enough of it. So just because a game is free doesn't necessarily mean that I'm going to be playing it. There are many other reasons I might or might not want to play a game too. So instead of that, we've been doing EverQuest 2. I've been getting quite into that. Yeah, I've been doing a lot of that as a little small group formed. Torag there went ahead and bought whatever Ujima flip you need to be able to make a guild happen. So we got a little guild going there. Tuesday Noob Club that rarely meets in there on a Tuesday. So it's ironic on two fronts instead of the usual one this time.
Excellent.
So that's quite good. Ironic guild name. That's what you need. Doing a lot of dungeon stuff. We've been sort of pottering about and experimenting greatly with the whole level thing that's fast becoming an irrelevance, as far as I can see. So you got this mentoring system, which is fabulous. You make a group up of as many different players as you like. Well, actually six, to be fair, but of any levels you like. And then you'll just mentor the person with the lowest level and you go do something interesting and fun at that level. So, and there's a dungeon for most age ranges in that game there, most level brackets. So we've been pottering about in, I think, Wailing Caverns is one of the early ones there. That's in the Common Lands. It's a sort of orky, undeady, overrun underground tunnel catacomb network with a big orc fortress at the bottom. Quite good fun. We've been doing some of Fallen Gate, which is a little bit higher. That's also in Common Lands. And then there's Blackborough, of course, and Stormhold as well. all good stuff. Where did we end up the last time? I can't remember now. There's quite a few dungeons in there that we're looking forward to trying that I'd never actually seen. I mean, I sort of dabbled a bit with some of these low-end ones on the way through, but in previous goes at it, but never really had a solid group there on the way up. But we seem to have formed a fairly good balance of classes there, and and most importantly, a guild made up of people who don't really care too much what level content they're doing, as long as it's something cooperative and interesting and fun. So that's the trick, I think. I mean, I'm starting to think that level is actually a solo thing only. It only matters to solo gamers' level, certainly in EverQuest 2. If you're in a group, then level becomes an arbitrary thing. It's usually you pick the level of the lowest person in the group so that you can all move forward together.
Well, but it's the same in every game, isn't
it? But not necessarily, because you've got this chronomagician thing. Basically, there's an NPC you can talk to, and you spend, admittedly, quite a high price to buy buff. 5 gold and 100 status points. 5 gold's quite a lot at our level, at my level anyway. I've never been much good at the cash thing, but I imagine it's more aimed at level 80s, yeah, to whom 5 gold's almost nothing, trivial expense. And then, yes, you buy down a level to suit. We were out the other day, I think we were having a look at Crushbone Keep, or the In Service of Honour quest, Heritage quest, which does the Dwarven Ringmail, and that's all in Kelethin, the sort of big treehouse city, with the Crushbone Keep nearby dungeon full of Orc castle there. And that's good, because we were all like 25 plus, and we all decided to, well, let's just go and buy the level 20 buff. It turned out you need one each, which I don't like the idea of. Yeah. I think you ought to be able to just have one of you buy it, and then everyone else mentor down to them. But apart from that, yeah. And it absolutely liberates the group from any concerns of what level are we all, how far have we got progression. As long as you don't mind repeating content you might have done before in, you know, to help a friend out, then it's fabulous. And so I really don't worry at all about out-leveling the rest of the guild, or being too high a level, or getting too much play in, or too little, because it all just comes together when you pop in there and form up a group. You just right-click mentor and away you go. And so as long as you don't mind doing stuff again that you've done before, you know, and value friendship higher than more than progress, as it were, then...
You're saying these weird things like...
I know. I never played an MMO before, yeah.
This whole friendship more than progress. What do you want?
I know. I'm enjoying EverQuest 2. I've only got the one character on the go, really. I've got the Guardian, which is their tank class, similar to Lotro. Got big old shield, big hammer, charge in there, keep everyone safe. Group-wise, it's good stuff. I got a warlock. I dabbled with a bit, but well, not really that impressed with it all. I think the warlock is the sort of AoE magic caster class that they give you for free. A lot of damage over time, whereas the wizard is more of a direct damage, lots of high damage on single target stuff.
Oh, a lot more immediate then, so that you actually get a feeling of you doing something rather than just waiting for stuff to tick off.
Yeah, I think warlock's about ticking stuff down and attritioning it all to death, whereas, mind you, the wizard does get a lot of very big AoE attacks indeed, as we're discovering. Torag, our group wizard, tends to have this, I don't know what it is, he pushes a button, there's a flash on the horizon, monsters come running in from 4 or 5 dungeons away. We've taken the launch codes off of him for it, so, you know, he can only deploy the weapon in particular strategic situations now, with the, you know, majority voting from the UN Council. It's terrifying, but also very handy if times it right. So I mean, once he's done it once, they're all here anyway, you might as well do it lots again quickly. Burn it all down. But yeah, every now and then he'll push a button and everything will just catch fire, fall over and die. So that's yes, quite frightening in a way. I'm actually on the bronze. I'm probably one of the few people who didn't pay. Initially, I was going to pay them the $10 and just upgrade to silver for the extra bag and the this, that and the other, the expert level skills and stuff, but then I decided to turn it into this sort of weird consumer research piece, so I'm staying bronze on purpose to see if it can be played to the end.
Ladies and gentlemen, what he really means is he's decided to be bloody-minded about it.
Well, stubbornness. You need a certain amount of stubbornness to do well in consumer affairs like I do.
You need a certain amount of stubbornness to play free-to-play games as well, so yes.
Well, you need a certain amount of stubbornness to get by on the bronze. It's increased difficulty, I'm sort of viewing it as, but then I am a bit sick and twisted, to be honest. You only have 2 bags out of a potential 5. You get 3 as a silver person, and presumably you can get the others by paying extra. The skills only go up to adept two. I think it's adept, which is the books that drop from chests sometimes. Although you can have people craft some of the journeyman ones, but not the master ones. So some of the crafting things. You can use master crafted items. You can't use legendary items, which means all of the heritage quests that we're doing, I can't actually use any of the rewards from. I'm just doing them for the hell of it. Also, you get a very large amount of status points, which function as guild XP. They have a leveling guild system in there as well. You got a cap on the amount of money you can carry, but then I'm hopeless at earning money in any of these MMOs ever. I'm always the last one to get the horse, etc., etc. And you can't use the broker as well, though silver people can't use the broker either. And they sell, get this right, 150 station cash, which I believe is $1.50. I think they go 1 cent per point on those. $1.50 will buy you 10 broker tokens, which will allow you to do one transaction on the broker each.
Oh, joy.
I know. Yeah, every so often they put stuff like this in, and you think, yeah, I can see why people who hate free-to-play will see where they're coming from, to be honest, yeah.
There's free-to-play.
The haters might have a point.
It's free-to-play, and then there's taking the piss.
Yeah, that one is definitely taking the piss, yeah, absolutely. But then I suppose people set their own value. I shouldn't be so judgmental about all this.
No, we can't judge anything, because everyone sets their own values to everything.
I've seen a lot of people running around the newbie area and the lowbie areas with, like, storm cloud surfboards and big sparkly panthers and incredibly elaborate armor, which I know for pretty no I didn't craft for them. So yeah, I think people are buying the stuff. I wonder how many people are just binging out on leftover station caches that they've ever had.
It's possible,
because I got a couple. I think I've got about 200 station cache from Free Realms. I was dabbling in Free Realms again. I didn't actually pay Free Realms anything. I was just dabbling around, and then they decided to give everyone a load of station cash for some reason or another, and that's
to try and encourage you to spend money.
Yeah, well, that backfired
first
spectacularly.
Hit's free.
Well, no, it isn't. So yeah, I see your plan. I have a strong mind. I do, but that's transferable between station games, which I don't think Turbine do.
No, they don't.
No, Turbine don't. You can't spend points you've bought in the DDO store and then go and buy things in Lotro for it. They're separate cash shops, which is I don't know why they do that. Perhaps because they don't maintain a centralised Turbine account.
I believe they didn't design it in from the word go.
No. Perhaps that's something we'd like to see in the future. Who knows? But but yeah, I'm doing all right, actually. I'm not really seeing a massive penalty for refusing to pay. I mean,
apart from you can't use any of the really good gear, any of the really good spells.
You can't
carry any money, and you've only got a couple of bags.
Yeah. Apart from all that, I'm actually having fun. And playing and doing quite well, and I'm level about 32, 31 now, adventure level, 33 crafting level.
You're playing this MMO for fun?
I'm playing this MMO for fun. Yeah, well, one of the other things is you can't adjust the alternate advancement XP slider. That's locked at 50%, which means half of all the XP you earn goes into the talent tree XP, basically, is what the alternate advancement stuff is.
So I can imagine
it's forcing me to become quite a well-rounded character.
I would imagine you like this, because it's cutting down on your decision on where to put that slider.
Well, that's good too. I'm liking it because it's making it... I mean, I'm trying to imagine how fast you'd level through that game if you could set it to 100% adventure XP. You'd be, I think, probably 2 to 3 weeks would see you at level 80.
But you wouldn't be very good because you wouldn't have any talents.
Well, you wouldn't have any talents. No, you wouldn't have any of the alternate background extras and perks, as it were, which I think are probably very useful. Certainly the ones I've been buying. They seem to be helping a lot. So, yeah, I mean...
That's interesting. So you can put it down probably that you get no
leveling
XP.
Well, this is it, yeah.
And you just round out your character.
Yeah, well,
see, that's nice. I like that.
That would be good. Yeah, I mean, you can actually turn XP off anyway just by right-clicking the XP bar, which is, you know, a bit mad, but you can see why they do that if you think about it.
Yeah, it's a very good feature.
But the alternative is to not do that, but if you were trying to stay a certain level to keep track of your friends, which you don't need to do anyway because of the mentoring system, yes, you could set XP to zero and just funnel all of your XP into the talents and earn yourself potentially, I think it's 120 points worth you can spend in there. I don't know. It's a very high number. You can put an awful lot of basically, yeah, doubling up on your levels that you've earned effectively. And I think that's what you're supposed to do when you get to 80 anyway, you know, the level cap. You just crank the lever all the way across to
it. Strikes me that that's been really useful for you in Warhammer at the moment.
Oh, that would be incredible if you could channel normal XP into renown or normal XP into influence, but then I suppose those are distinct for a reason.
But if there's just anything else you could be leveling up, which doesn't affect your level.
You wouldn't want people to be earning effectively what effectively amounts to PvP XP by doing PvE, which is the yellow XP. So, yeah, I don't. I mean, yeah, the big objection everyone has with free to play is that they're just going to put a whole load of crap in there that you have to buy to get anywhere. You know, you won't be able to level, you won't be able to fight. I mean, don't ever rant about Project Entropia. I don't know what it's like these days, Planet Calypso or whatever. Seeing people saying that it's actually quite new and different and changed nowadays, but I'm not going to go back and have a look. It was bloody awful.
It was appallingly bad.
You turned up free. Yeah, well, that's all right. Yeah, free client. All right, let's have a little look. And you got absolutely nothing. You could physically not fight at all without buying for real money a starter weapon. I mean, God, you know, and that is free to play gone bad and gone mad. Yeah.
Yeah. Wrong way to do it.
Yeah. EverQuest 2, I wonder if they're giving away too much for free, to be honest.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know. I mean, I wouldn't want to put an end to a good thing that I'm quite on.
They're not listening.
How about maybe I'm just too stubborn or I'm weird and this is actually I'm sort of puttering along with a gameplay style that most people would find untenable. I don't know. You'd have to try it for yourselves, folks. You know, have a little look, see what you think. But so far, I'm not seeing any real need to pay them any money for quite some time. It is quite annoying only having two bag slots. It's quite annoying not being able to wear the legendary gear. But it's not game-breaking at all, in the slightest. You can carry on and do... I mean, I wonder what impact this will have on endgame raiding, where gear is life. And the inability to wear legendary gear is probably going to...
You will be gimped beyond gimpness.
I will be gimped beyond... Well, I certainly won't get in on any pickup raiding, that's for sure. But then, for me, MMOs are about the journey from 1 to 80, not what goes on beyond 80, you know? I probably couldn't see it being tenable at all, being an endgame raider on a bronze ticket. And I think if they had any way of spotting that that's what you'd do, then there'd be a snobbery about it all as well. You just wouldn't be... They wouldn't even entertain
the possibility. Is there ability to...
I don't know. I don't know if there is. I don't think you get marked out, obviously, the sorts of things you're wearing.
If you look at your gear and say, hang on, all of this stuff is a bit
fancy. Why is this person not wearing any legendary items? Yeah. At level 80 with X many hours played and what have you. Yeah, yeah. I think there's going to be all sorts of prejudice there. In a new and interesting form as well.
Oh, I think so, definitely. Yeah.
But I think if you're only really interested in seeing the game and enjoying the journey from start to end, you know, start to end game, rather, I think you can probably do all right without shelling out much at all. I mean, I think the $10 for silver is definitely worthwhile. You get so much extra for it, and it is a one-off payment of not an awful lot of money at all. You get more bag slots, better skills, etc., etc. You know, one thing you don't get on bronze is the ability to see any global chat channels.
Oh.
I know. I'd pay them money to keep that.
Oh,
to
yeah.
Most. It's so tranquil and peaceful and soothing. And I was talking to Teppo there, who managed to get himself into a massive argument. He's on silver. I think he's gone gold, actually. And he managed to get himself into a massive argument in the newbie chat about the welfare systems, comparative US versus UK. Yeah, that's a subject you just don't want to touch long stick, to be honest. But yeah, I'm not seeing all the idiots spouting off in general chat because I can't see any general chat at all, which is quite... Actually, I can see OOC chat. I don't know. I've seen that before. I don't know if I can type on it or not. So yeah, I mean, I think if you're planning on playing EverQuest 2 at all in any real serious capacity, you probably do want the silver, definitely, and you might even want to shell out for the odd race or class. I think they're selling... There was one of them that they weren't going to sell as unlocks, but now they've decided they are going to sell as unlocks. I don't know whether it was races or classes, I can't remember which, but they've done a bit of a U-turn there, so... So yeah, you can pick out the race and class that you particularly want to be, buy a silver to get the unlocks there, and then dine comfortably on that for a great many levels and a great amount of real life game time as well.
Excellent.
And if you enjoy that, then yeah, why not throw them a few extra coins here and there in terms of extra content. Thing is, I don't think they've done much in the way of content unlocks, which is my preferred way of working with these item shops, is to buy... I mean, DDO does a very good system indeed. You buy modules, which are content and features as well. Whereas EverQuest 2, I think probably because I'm guessing they rushed the conversion a bit and didn't have time to sort of divide it all out into content bracketing. Instead, they just decided to go with various unlocks and tiers of membership. So anyone playing on bronze, as a consequence, has access to the entire game pretty much all the way up. There might be an expansion or two at the very far end you're missing, but But yeah, so bronze eminently workable, and this, you see, I think it might allay many people's fears of free to play basically turning into pay for hurdles, and it doesn't seem to be that at all. If you're well, stubborn enough or have enough willpower, but then it's not a huge amount to unlock some of these things and make the game even more enjoyable. And
at this point in the discussion, are we not beyond the fear of free to play?
I don't
should
know.
Should we
some
not
people
be
still...
beyond it with so many games having gone free to play?
I don't know. I mean, should we talk about APB a bit?
Yeah, okay, go on.
Yeah,
then.
Well, I haven't actually played it at all, so it's not really what we're playing at all. But I mean, we're seeing all sorts of commentary. They are now actually closed. I think the latest rumor is that Epic might be.
I'm not sure
in.
I believe that.
I don't know if I believe that at all, but for functional purposes, APB's basically finished now, and for design reasons, I saw a good bit on Kill 10 Rats, actually.
80 days it lasted.
80 days from launch to closure, which I think is probably a record, yeah.
Divide 100 million by 80 days.
Yeah, yeah.
So, what, 1.5 million a day?
Yeah, not good, not good. Yeah, sort of Kill 10 Rats calling people out for posting I told you so posts when in fact no one had told them so at all. I remember a lot of people being quite keen and enthusiastic about this new idea.
Yeah.
But I mean, I'm not going to say I told you so. I'm on record as having said that it wasn't for me and that I didn't like it, but
we may have said massively broken.
Well, I don't know about broken. Maybe we did tell you so. I don't know. I can't remember.
From a design point of view, it was. But I fully expected them to be able to fix it.
Yeah, with hindsight, it's easy to see. I mean, it's basically pay for hurdles in terms of equipment and so on. Were the guns buyable? I can't remember. You had to grind a lot to get the decent gear.
You had to level up to get the decent gear. The big design flaw was the more effort you put in, the better you were.
Mm.
Which is wrong for any PvP drop-in game.
But was it a question of pay for unlock hurdles there?
No, not really.
No, perhaps not. Well, anyway, I'm quite pleased with the way EverQuest's looking, what they've decided to do there, how they've divided it up. You got the gold membership there, which I think that one is a bit naughty, to be honest, because you still don't get everything for what would have been the monthly sub. But in terms of bronze, and yeah, why not go silver? $10. What difference does it make? I'm going to keep going with the bronze just because I want to see if you can do this.
And
all
a bloody
the way up.
Minded.
Yes, and a bit of a tight ass as well. So that's good. But yeah, I can see me puttering around with EverQuest 2. I've been sort of quite engrossed, so engrossed in that I've not really gotten around to downloading the Lotro thing yet either as well. So.
Yeah.
I mean, I will go with Lotro eventually. I think I might hold out for the European free-to-play.
Although I think it's free-to-play at the moment, effectively.
Mm.
Like, I think they're letting everyone in.
Oh, I see, right. Until we've sorted the billing out, we've got no billing.
Yeah, I saw something along
really?
Those lines.
Oh, well, do look into that then, European folks, if you're looking to get in there. And also, if they're letting everyone in for free while they sort it out, now's a great time to sort out what goes in what bag.
Yeah.
If you've got level, say, for example, a level 65 Guardian with full bags, now might be an excellent time to move all the important stuff into bag slots 1 and 2.
You are so buying the extra bags. In that game especially, you were buying those bags.
Well, this is it.
It's 50 quid a bag, by the way.
No, but it doesn't matter how many bags they give you. They can give you 2 bags, or they can give you 10 bags, and they can have, like, 5 slots each, or they can have 50 slots each. You're going to run out. The amount of junk that you hoard will expand to fill the amount of inventory space they give you. So this is why I'm not really feeling it with the 2 bags EverQuest thing. I'm just being a bit more choosy and throwing more stuff out.
Because you
I probably
don't know that you're meant
anyway.
To have 5 bags.
Yeah.
I want 6 bags.
Uh-huh.
Well, 7, 10 bags.
Well,
just let me fork out an extra fiver to get a new bag each time. And
you're still going to fill them with rubbish.
Yeah, all of them.
Yes.
I'll never have to drop a single thing ever again.
Yeah. Well, anyway, I mean, I'm looking forward to Lotro, but I'm all right at the moment. You know, EverQuest 2 and Lotro are much of a similar sort of game, and I'm wondering why I really need two of the same sorts of game.
I would admit that this European delay has sort of taken the wind out of my Lotro sales.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'm thinking we may not get to it until early next year, even.
Well, I mean, unless this whole free to play thing turns out to suddenly be a horrific experiment gone wrong and vanishes overnight, I think we've got time to pop in there when we're ready.
I think what will end up happening with our getting our group back together is it will happen when people are starting getting bored of level 40 in.
I see. I've kind of scuppered it with the Warhammer thing. Does it turn out that Monday's the only night everyone can make it?
Yeah.
I see.
And you've got 3 of the players there.
We'll have to have some private talks as to how to move forward with that. Then,
I think it's going to be when War.
I'm seeing War lasting a couple of months more, at least.
It's only September now. I reckon it'll last.
Probably by Christmas.
It'll last to Christmas, and yeah. I reckon in January we can move over.
Well, we'll see. Yeah. Let's see, I've been playing a bit of Eve. I have let my sub go now. I'm on my working off the last of the 3 month for Eve. But it's still good fun. And this is one I'm determined to leave wanting more, to leave on a high, you know? Especially Eve, which can be the stage for so many emotional highs and lows. I've decided that I'm just going to walk away happy from an MMO for a change, you know?
Would the oh, here we go. Would them adding a dedicated salvage ship?
No, because it's clearly just a retextured Prime A, look.
It is, yes.
Yes, that's cheating. Design a new ship that's even more awesome.
The lengths they will go to stop us using Hurricanes.
The Hurricane is not a salvage ship.
It is the best salvage ship they make.
Good grief.
And it's going to be better
than
this.
Are we going to have to do opposing for and against posts this week for another fundamental
disagreement? We can try, but you're not going to be able to come up with any reasons.
Right. We did a Class 4 wormhole.
Wow.
Yeah, it's almost difficult
to date. Did Ackley die?
No. It is. He's doing invaluable work as a scout stealth bomber at the moment. Okay. No.
Oh, yeah, he got the cloaking.
He's got
device,
cloaking and he hasn't
died
since.
You guys kept trying to get him killed.
No, it's been good. I mean, I've got Logistics 5 as well. I can run two large S95A shield transporters indefinitely and be cap stable.
Onto two different targets, of
course. Onto two different targets, all the same one, yeah. I can run all three of them fairly constantly without having to go. Actually, I think three of them will work cap stable because it's when it goes down to a third of cap, it's at its most regen, isn't it? Yeah. So I think I can probably. So that's 1,000 hit points every 5 seconds on any three targets. Yeah. Good stuff. I mean, I really can't tank myself, though. The Scimitar's really bad at self-repair. So, yeah, if you do come across a fleet with one, you probably want to target it first. But, we just did really well. We got a pretty high take. I think there was about 10 or 11 of us there, and we got 35 million each as a payout. So, yeah, it was good. I think we're looking for Class 5s now is the next thing. I think, sooner or later we're going to get it wrong and come across...
Cure, Dargio,
I don't know. Do they have NPC capital ships, sleepers? I can't remember.
I don't know if the sleepers do, but level 5 missions do.
But I don't know. It's fun, and we're getting into a good routine with it, but ultimately it is the same kind of activity week in, week out. So I'm not too worried about sort of stepping away from it, to be honest. And I'm confident the little fleet there can look after themselves without me because they got quite a lot of other logistics ships there as well. So, yeah, it's all good fun there. I mean, where do you go next in EVE? Obviously, it's PvP, but...
That's the problem.
Time and again, I try and get involved and try to acclimatise myself and never manage. So, what's the point in forcing
it? If the amount of effort the PvP in EVE takes, it's just too much.
Well, I don't know. I mean, obviously, some people... It's more about psychology, isn't it? I mean, I'm not the sort of person, and I've sort of come to a conclusion, especially with Warhammer as well. Like, I had a very bleak day the other day in Warhammer, just soloing in the open RVR area, and I was just losing one-on-ones left, right, and centre. So ultimately I just hooked onto the back of the Zerg train and it all picked up from there, really. So I don't know. I mean, you've got to be comfortable with the idea of losing 50% of the time if you want to enjoy PvP. And that doesn't matter what game you're talking about.
I think you have to be comfortable with losing
more than
75% of the time.
Well, because often the other fella knows more about what he's doing than you do.
And there's
always
better
gear or
But then there'll be
tactically.
That one kill you get. Like
I don't get enough of those to encourage me to keep trying. That's
a game
problem.
I was playing earlier, which I'll mention when we talk about it, over the other side of the map, me, one of the crappier assault sniper rifle, boom, headshot on the other side of the map. Really happy about it. And it just, that really made me feel good.
Yeah, I mean...
It made up for the fact that I had a 0.30 kill-death ratio at the time.
I mean, I like Planetside and I like Warhammer PvP, both of which are just large-scale zerging about, and it's more about the greater push and the strategic victories and me trying to help out as best I can. But the sort of one-on-one lone dog fights, I just don't really enjoy an awful lot at all. Odds are I won't win.
Yeah.
You know, even if perfectly balanced, it's 50-50, obviously. And usually I'm not quite all there and I haven't quite got the hang of it and I'm missing a trick. And
you're just not ruthless enough.
Well, yeah. And then even if I do win, I tend to feel guilty. So, and I don't get a lot out of winning. I know it sounds weird.
I don't care if you kill them.
I don't get the exhilarated, yes, in your face rush when I beat someone in any kind of contest.
Most of these things don't have any skill involved.
Well, I don't know. I mean,
war does not have much skill involved in killing someone. There's just the ability of knowing which abilities to use at any one time.
I suppose. I mean, the ultimate, the long and the short of it is that I get I get a lot less down from losing than up from winning. So, yeah, the maths of it all suggest I probably shouldn't participate.
Yeah.
So, yeah, so apart from that, I mean, they're talking about PvE as being the next big development thrust in EVE. They're going to be doing, they've got teams working on some sort
we'll
of
see.
PvE thing. It's not walking stations, but there'll be something else.
They need it.
I don't know. Yeah, I don't know, does it?
The PvP will look after itself. No, the PvP's there, stable, good. Everyone loves it. It will look after itself. They just need the PvE there to be a well-rounded product.
I always feel guilty for enjoying moments in EVE because I feel like I've just stumbled into the wrong game and shouldn't be there anyway, you know?
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think, well, probably another week or two of that, and then that'll be that, really, for another however long. Set a big, long skill training, get a month of it, I suppose.
A day free.
Yeah.
And no, you can't, can you?
I think you'll still get... No, no.
No, it all went...
No. Well, bollocks, I'm not even going back then. Screw them. The big perk of going back is knowing that your big, long Battleship 5 skill has finished and that you've earned about half a billion in data cores while you were away.
Yeah,
and now they're taking both of those things out, so there really is no reason to ever play EVE again for me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Walking in stations.
I want to go back and see that, I suppose. I might set up a little hairdressing boutique and salon. Yeah, that'd be nice.
Yeah, you're just walking into a stereotype there.
I know.
Yeah, anyway.
So, apart from that, no DDO, because I don't play that anymore, and EverQuest 2. Yeah, so my offline games, I've finished Assassin's Creed 1, as you may have heard on a previous show, and I've now borrowed Assassin's Creed 2.
Yes.
Off of your good self there.
Punch the Pope.
I haven't got that far yet, and you've spoiled the ending for me.
No, I haven't spoiled the
repeatedly.
Ending.
Repeatedly.
I have not spoiled the
I'm
ending.
I'm quite looking forward to the Pope punching,
I've spoiled
actually,
the fact that you get to punch the Pope.
Well, that is quite hard. They should put that on the back of the box on the bullet points. Yeah. Yeah.
It's very topical this week. Because
open world
here.
Sandbox, stealth gameplay, punch Pope.
Yeah.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah, it's all a bit... I really like the intro, the start bit, where they actually bust you out of where you were at the end of Assassin's Creed 1. It continues almost immediately straight after the end of Assassin's Creed 1. You get actually let out of the big cell thing you're in at the top of the skyscraper, and then you get to do all your assassin-y stuff on real people in the real world as Desmond, which is awesome. The big fist fight in the security guards as you're getting out. And think, hang on, I know this stuff. And suddenly it all comes to you. It's great. And then almost immediately you find yourself in another tower blocky loft apartment thing with another animus. Under you go, and away we go again. Yes, what the hell's Danny Wallace's problem?
He's a bit feisty.
The very first time he meets me, he's full of sarcasm and bitterness. And I quite like it. I think it's quite cool. But yeah, straight into another romp. The city of Florence around, what was it, 1600s? Is sort of that kind of time. The Renaissance.
Yes,
I've met Leonardo da Vinci,
he's a loon.
And basically it's quite fascinating to see how you become basically the same character in the first one but from an entirely different starting point. It's quite good. I'm liking it's refinements, isn't it?
Yes.
Tweaks.
It is the poster boy example of why a sequel in computer games can quite often be better than the original.
Absolutely.
Because they fix all the problems with it.
Yeah, spiritually it's the same game. You know, if you enjoyed the first one, you'll love this one. But they've done so much to make it, flow, more elegant. The whole idea of cover and blending. You know, no longer is it just put your head down and walk like a priest. You know, you actually blend in with moving blocks of people as crowds and so on. It's really quite a lot more believable, basically.
Yeah.
Yeah. I like the throwing money to distract. That's quite good.
I like the throwing women to distract.
Yeah, that first bit where you're being taught how to use courtesans as cover, and you're just strolling through Florence with four ladies of negotiable affection clustered around you, and you've got the big hood on, and you're just thinking, oh, I'm such a pimp. It's brilliant. Very good.
As they peel off one by one to take care of guards.
Yeah, you just point at guards and push the button, and they run off and distract them. It's fantastic. I'm going to like this a lot, I think. Yeah,
how many wrist blades you got at the moment?
I only got the one.
Okay.
Is there more? Presumably there's only two, because what with only two wrists?
No, you
and
get
stuff.
Them on your ankle.
Ankle blades. Yeah. No, we're not talking Bayonetta here.
When you get two wrist blades, there's this brilliant move you can do, which is jumping down between two guards, wrist blades out, and sticking both through the head.
Yeah, I spent a lot of time in the early sections running away from trouble and trying to shake. I like the new distraction thing as well, where you've got to get out of the radius as well as break line of sight. Otherwise, I was in a hay cart and they stabbed it with a sword. Yeah. What?
This used to work before.
They never did that in the Crusades. Yeah. So all good stuff. I mean, the whole business with the truth and these hidden glyphs is new and interesting and a bit what the hell. Sort of continuing from the what the hell end of Assassin's Creed 1, you start finding hidden things encoded in the Animus and all sorts of weirdness. I'm looking forward to finding out what that's about too.
How are you finding the puzzles for those?
The puzzles? Very easy actually, but then I do have a superior intellect, so that's quite good. No, I got the first one. Spoiler, if the clue was in the question.
What's the first one?
There's 12 paintings, and you've got to pick five of them that have the same core similarities.
Oh, yeah.
Yes, and core, and apples. Yes, look, there's an apple, there's an apple. Yeah, and it's different for each one. I've only done two so far, so yeah, we'll see how that goes. No, liking it a lot. Presumably get to visit other cities, because I'm uncovering Florence very quickly.
Yeah.
But presumably that just acts as a starting area anyway.
Yeah, there's several cities.
No, okay, good. I like the architectural differences between the different cities in the first game.
This has very much the same thing, even more gorgeous.
I'm not quite sure how the introduction of an economy works with it all. I'm still finding my feet, because you have to actually earn money and buy equipment in this one, which you didn't do in the first one.
Don't worry about that.
Well, I found that if you just hold down the fast walk button and then just barge straight through a crowd, you'll pickpocket each and every single one of them and earn about 10 florins a second or so.
Yeah, don't worry about that. Have you got your villa yet?
No, there's a villa. Oh, player housing, fantastic.
Yeah, once you get your player housing, money takes care of itself.
Okay, fair enough. No, I'm looking forward to playing a lot more of that. I've just gotten started with it all, really, but quite fine. I'm finding the character of Ezio a lot more nice, I suppose, a lot more charismatic and engaging than Altair, who's frankly a bit of an arse, really.
He was, yeah.
And the whole of Assassin's Creed 1 is basically him learning not to be such an arse and then discovering that actually he should have been an arse all along. So, yeah, Ezio's more of a sort of family being wronged and on a tale of revenge. It's a lot more of a comfortable character to inhabit, I think. So that's quite good. So playing lots of that. Also, Thief.
Oh.
Yeah, all I was playing Assassin's Creed and thinking, and suddenly just went on this big nostalgic spiral back to the start of it all. The game that invented the genre, Thief, the Dark Project. I got Thief Gold, which is I don't ever remember seeing a Thief not gold. It's like a special edition that has an extra four missions in it and so on. Fantastic stuff, although an absolute pig to try and get to run. I you'll be so proud of me. I did a heroic work of IT analysis and deduction and system specs and tweaking and research just to get the damn thing to work on Vista. Anyway, turns out what you need to do, here we go then. So you need to turn threaded optimization off on NVIDIA control panel. You need to make sure you run with administrator, obviously. That's your first. If anything goes wrong on Vista, make sure you're running as administrator. Then you need to re-register. There's a particular video codec that installs when you install the game, and then which gets then immediately blasted over and overwritten by Vista trying to be helpful. So to make the movies work, you need to re-register that codec manually by opening up a command window and typing regserver32x here.
Ew, it uses direct show.
So da 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 whatever, yeah. Oh yeah, and you've got to do that every time you want to play it. Also, now this is the big one. When you launch Thief up, you get into the menu at that point, and immediately at that point, you need to Alt-Tab to Task Manager and set Thief.exe with a CPU affinity of only a single processor.
I could give you a command line to do that.
I could really do with one. Yeah,
because
if you
run
plunge
DLL
out,
will do it. I
if
think.
You plunge out of the menus in and start playing the game, it goes wrong and locks up almost immediately because it can't handle multiple processors very well. So once you've done all that, you can start playing it again. It's a fantastic game. I mean, it's very low res, but then you know it's a 1999 title. I mean, it's over 10 years old.
Wow.
Yeah. And I'm still finding it an immense amount of fun. They did Lord Baffin's Estate, the first one, where you learn how to skulk about and steal the scepter and everything. Then there was the Bone Horde, and it's all good stuff. I'm on the one where they try and assassinate you now, and I've just got the lockpicks. But I'm playing in expert mode as well, which was always the difficult one. Yeah, and they did some fantastic things with multiple difficulty levels on Thief. First game, the normal default level, fairly straightforward. And, you know, if you get it wrong, you can more or less tank your way through each level with the sword. But if you crank it all the way up to expert, it takes away half of your hit points. You only get every other hit point, which basically means you will die in two sword hits. You can take one in the face, and then you have to leg it. All the monsters, the threshold for when how far away they can hear your footsteps and stuff, that all gets made more difficult. They follow you about a lot more. They're more persistent when they're searching shadows and stuff. And also objectives. Pretty much every mission, you'll be given the extra objective of you're not allowed to kill anyone. So suddenly all the long shot broadhead arrow sniping from the shadows is out the window, and that was always so easy. But then that does make it a little bit easy as well sometimes, because when you shoot them with an arrow, they scream and everyone comes running, and also they drop loads of pools of blood everywhere. If you just sneak up behind them and wallop them around the back with the cosh, they go down silently, and you can just stuff them in a cupboard. There's some very full cupboards on the missions I've been doing. Also, you'll typically have to find two or three more valuable knickknacks that have been hidden there, specific named ones, and the amount of loot you have to find goes up massively as well. But that's good as well, because that figure is what you're then used to spend in the shop at the start of the next mission to buy the equipment. So I've always got loads of equipment.
That's okay then.
And also because I'm not using the arrows, I don't run out of those anytime soon either. It's just fantastic. I mean, you've really got to, I don't know, divorce the look and the feel of it. I mean, certainly the graphical technical thing, you know, I mean, the idea that unless it's got, you know, all this shading and bitmaps and normals and bump maps and this, that and the other, it's not worth playing at all. This is all flat shaded, quite low res, but, you know, the animation's a bit ropey and the character models are rather simple. But the gameplay style is as fresh as ever. It's fantastic how a really good idea can transcend technical limitations and, you know, chasing the new shiny. I mean, you know, there's all sorts. I mean, the Assassin's Creed games are examples. There's all your Splinter Cells, yeah, etc. Anything else you can think of? I mean, there's the whole sneak 'em up genre.
The last Batman game was a pretty big sneak 'em up game.
Yeah, the stuff I haven't played that also uses this kind of mechanics as well. I mean, it tends to be a more softer thing these days in that if you're spotted, you can usually duke it out a bit, but it's clear that's not what you're meant to
be doing.
In
Batman, if you were spotted by a guy with a gun, you would die.
Yeah, you shoot. Oh, blimey.
You had one chance to get away, basically.
Fair enough. Proper sneak 'em up then, yeah. But, yeah, I recommend it. I don't know where you'd even find it now. eBay, probably.
Not Good Old Games.
Not Good Old Games, yeah. Did you see that?
Yeah, gone.
You showed me that. Yeah, Good Old Games is shut down, which is a travesty, frankly, and I feel slightly responsible as well because I didn't buy much stuff from
them. We're all responsible.
Yeah, but that was probably one of the few ways we had to buy old classics like this legally. Yeah, but now we're going to have to just all go and become dirty thieving pirates to find this stuff, or just look for it all on eBay, I suppose, and hope for the best. But, yeah, I'd urge anyone who's never played it to track down, certainly Thief, the first game. Thief 2, The Metal Age, that's a good one too. Basically the same, but a little more advanced. Thief Deadly Shadows is a sort of departure and a sort of quantum leap in technology, and is a lot more palatable to a modern player, I suppose, but also features many of the same core winning gameplay mechanics, to be honest. So I've been having a lot of fun with that.
Thief 4 will be out soon.
Thief 4 coming soon. I've forgotten all about that. Awesome.
It'd be great.
Yeah. So, but yeah, I've got a side project too.
I'll tell you tonight, yes.
Play through the entire Thief series on hard, on the most difficult setting possible, and see if I can do it. I'm looking forward to Thief Deadly Shadows as well, because that's where Securom enters the fray, and I'm going to have to try some quite shady dealings.
Somebody will have patched it out by now.
I hope so, yeah. So, yeah, I probably better stop talking so you can talk some stuff.
You've done 50 minutes.
Go on then.
Okay, yes. I've been playing games.
Yes, what games have you been playing?
Well, there's two big releases this week. Which one do you want me to talk about first?
Tell me about Halo Reach.
Okay,
I understand Move. There's the new Halo game.
I'll talk about Move then.
You scumbag.
Move does this.
That's the sound of a ping pong ball on a black handle going squidge, squidge, squidge.
Yeah. Right, Move is the motion controller for PS3, and it's got the little navigation
controller. Yeah. We know what Move is. We've been talking about it for the last year or so on the show and various news things and so
on.
Yeah,
and it's finally out.
It's finally out and in your hands. What do you reckon?
You wouldn't know it's out.
Has it been a bit low profile?
The adverts on TV aren't exactly high profile. They're very sedated, and the shops aren't really pushing it. The supermarkets definitely aren't. But yeah, it's out, and it's probably a good thing that they're not pushing it too hard.
Well,
it means
the supermarkets really get involved in hardware that much.
If it makes them money, yes.
I suppose.
Oh, you see the number of displays everyone had for Reach.
Yeah.
So, yes, I played some of the games, and I've set it up.
Yeah.
Now, first of all, I'm going to talk about the camera.
Okay, yeah, we've got a... It sits on top of the telly, little eye there.
Yeah, it's a bog-standard PlayStation
the eye. The unblinking blue eye of Sauron.
Yeah, that's the first problem. It's got this stupid blue LED on it, which means that whenever your PS3's on, like you're watching a Blu-ray, unless you unplug the camera, on top of your TV's a really annoying blue LED.
Quite piercing, yeah. I mean, when did I miss that? When did blue LEDs suddenly become the thing that
when
everyone
they got
had
cheap.
To have?
It's really, really annoying, and I despise it.
Well, blue doesn't tell you anything. Green tells you a thing is working correctly. Red is probably an alarm, an alert, you know, sort of system
a
thing.
A blue LED tells you that it's managed to create a light source which is brighter than anything else in the room.
Blue doesn't convey any information.
it conveys annoyance. Yeah, anyway, that's really annoying. And also, the cable on the back's way too stiff, so it's quite hard to place it without it just being pulled around.
So you're going to have to blue tack it to the top of the telly or something. Not ideal, really, is
it? No. Yeah, the camera, because they've reused their old camera, which was not necessarily the best bit of kit.
So this is from the iToy.
Yeah, that is the iToy. So they didn't really...
Is it literally the same thing? Are they just shipping those?
No, it's literally
They found a new use for the same...
Yeah, the camera isn't even widescreen.
So they haven't even made a camera specifically
It's the old...
this is them trying to shift iToys.
Yeah, it's the old non-widescreen camera.
Yeah, that was a thing I spotted almost immediately.
Yes, when we did the calibration, and we both looked incredibly fat.
We were quite wide.
Yes.
We're quite wide in real life, but...
Not that wide.
Not that wide, no.
We're almost wider than we were at all. Yeah, I reckon that's going to be a problem. Because it is quite hard to convince people that it's great, but you're going to look really fat when you do it. That's
who's
not...
got a 4:3 television these days?
No one.
Yeah, okay.
And also the last thing, of course, is the age-old problem. The PS3 has no rear USB socket, so when your camera's plugged in, you've got this USB cable in the front, which makes your entertainment system look really messy.
Fair enough.
Right, should we talk about games?
Yeah, okay. So, did you actually get any games?
No, it comes with a demo disc.
It comes
in
with
Europe,
a demo
disc. Because Sony hates Europe.
That's shocking. That really is. You would expect a peripheral to come with one game that works with that peripheral. This is an example of how to use the peripheral.
Yeah, no, it comes with a demo disc full of demos.
You don't buy just Guitar Hero guitars on their own, do you? Yeah. Well, I suppose you can, can't you?
You can do, yeah, but you tend not...
You wouldn't start with that, no.
No. Right, let's start off with the Tiger Woods game.
Okay.
You know, golf, I thought that would be brilliant. That would work fine.
It sounds like a very natural kind of use for this kind of controller.
It's been so ineptly shoehorned into the game.
Oh.
You have to start with a controller, go through some menus to try and figure out how to tell it to use the motion controller, and then I couldn't get it to reliably recognise the direction I had the controller placed in when I was pushing the button and when I was swinging.
Oh dear.
It was an absolute, utter failure.
Ooh, that's not good. So you say shoehorned in. I mean, we were in game during the week and we were looking at the PlayStation 3 shelf and they'd put all the with Move support titles all in one place, and there was only about 8 of them in total. But also, a lot of them, they seemed to be Move enhanced rather than requires
Move. Some of them are Move enhanced. Like the Tiger Woods thing, it's been out for a while.
Yeah, yeah.
Sold really badly anyway.
Yeah.
Pete and War, who's in charge of EA Sports, basically said that it's been really badly selling this year.
Oh.
Possibly because of Tiger Woods, possibly because people just bought a golf.
Mm.
But yeah, it's just been added to this later and it hasn't worked.
So are there any designed for Move
titles?
There
are indeed.
Because those are going to be the ones you really want to judge it on, I suppose.
There is in fact a sports game.
Okay.
Because, you know, like Wii Sports, sports games what really sells it and what should be bundled with it in the UK, but no.
Yeah.
So I played the demo that's on the disc, which gives us something called Disc Golf.
Disc Golf?
Yeah.
Right.
I imagine, if you would, that the term Frisbee was trademarked and too expensive for Sony to get.
Okay.
So you're basically playing Frisbee and trying...
With your disc golf ball.
Yeah.
Your golf discs, rather.
Yeah. And you're trying to get it into a net canister thing in as least shots as possible.
Frisbee golf, God. Right, yeah, okay.
Yeah, now...
So Frisbee being a disc-like object that you hold in a certain way that does not resemble a move at all.
You're just doing the swinging and letting go when you let go.
Okay, well, you push the button to let go, or...
You let go the button when you let go.
Okay.
You do not let go the
controller. That sounds like it might work.
Yeah, but the accuracy was off.
Oh.
It never quite went where I was expecting.
Is that the title or the hardware?
I think it's the title.
Okay. So did you have anything where the accuracy was spot on?
We'll get to that.
Okay. right.
Yeah. Then there was that game was just basically really rubbish.
Mm.
The accuracy wasn't there. It was awkward to play. I could see it causing fights. It wasn't as good as Wii Sports would be.
causing fights. Uh-huh.
And also there's a table tennis game in there.
Oh, that should be superbly suited, considering it's a ping pong ball on the top.
Yes, now I think it is superbly suited, but I did manage to spend a good 10 minutes playing with twisting the controller, which has one-to-one mapping, you should note.
Right.
They say it's one-to-one, it knows exactly where it is, and it was in my wrist.
Yeah.
So therefore, how then, in the game, was it turning the wrist in such painful-looking positions,
Ooh.
As if there were no bones in the wrist?
Oh, dear.
It was quite fun, actually. Yeah. I thought it should be doing special noises when I did it.
Crunching.
When it was twisting his arm round the back. And yeah.
Okay, so you've come across a device that allows you to snap a virtual man's wrist in real time.
And it was good.
Okay, fair enough. No, finding the market.
As far as the table tennis game goes, yeah, I guess it's a accurate table tennis game.
Okay. It works. It does what you'd expect it to do.
It seems to, yeah.
Spot accurate.
Yeah. The problem I had with it, I think table tennis is a waste of time.
You don't like table tennis. No. Right. Okay. but from a technical perspective, nothing, no beef with that then.
Not really, no.
Okay. Now, you just have to like table tennis in the first place.
It didn't have the archery or the sword fighting, which are the two things I do.
Yeah, yeah.
So, those
sound like they... So
I got to judge it on two sports I thought were rubbish, so therefore I think it's rubbish.
Okay, that's the purpose of a demo disc.
The thing that really came out of it was, have you played Wii Sports?
No, I haven't actually.
It's cheerful music all the time, it's happy and just basically makes you want to play. It's very,
a little bit saccharine, it's not a dark and brooding game.
It's very Nintendo.
Yes.
Now, this sports game is very Sony. It is...
clinical?
Yes.
Yeah.
Business-like. There's not music going underneath everything.
Functional.
Sucking the fun out of it.
Oh, God. It's bad that you could say very Sony and I can come up with those words without thinking about it. Yeah, I know what you mean.
It's very corporate.
Very corporate, yes.
Given the choice, no matter how good the controller is, you're going to want to play Wii Sports because
it's just more fun and entertaining.
Yeah, it feels like a more fun
a better
thing
feel
to
it.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah,
something they're going to have to work on as a whole company. Then I guess if we keep coming up with words like that.
There was a beat painting game.
Beat painting.
So where you basically drew on the screen using the remote, which was 100% accurate.
Okay,
it was tracking the ball and drawing, painting on the screen exactly what I was doing.
Right,
and this affected the music. I don't
know. Sounds a bit like performance art to me.
I don't know why I was doing it.
I could see you sat there with like a flat screen and a generator and a PS3 on the south bank of the Thames there, outside the Tate Modern.
Yeah, I don't know why I was doing it. I got bored of it really quickly. I'm not entirely sure there was a game there.
Well, yeah. Well, this is it. I mean, it's interesting, but is it a game? Is it fun?
Yeah. Shall I move on to the good games?
Okay, yep.
Right. The real... gem so far of the dedicated to it games is Echo Chrome 2.
Okay, yeah, now you showed me a little bit of that. I wasn't convinced, but I guess this isn't an ideal situation to be.
Which is a puzzle game.
Yep.
But in this one, you're basically pointing a torch at the screen to move shadows so that a shadowy guy can walk across and get to an exit.
You're shining a torch at a three dimensional object, and it's the shadow. What shadow is produced becomes the play field, and you have a shadow man.
And you get
who's
holes that they can drop through.
Yeah.
Seems
like an interesting concept, but a little bit short and cheap and cheerful. Are they really big and complex?
It will get really big and complex. Okay, I don't think it's out at the moment.
So we're looking at the demo there. Right?
Yeah, and also I tweeted that I liked it, and the producer guy retweeted it, so I'm quite happy.
Fair enough.
Yeah, I'm really impressed by that. It really shows what sort of things can be done and how well it works. So, yeah, I like that, and that is a game which I think I will play using it when the actual full game's out.
Perhaps one or two more elaborate puzzles included in the demo might help.
Yeah, the demo...
I just wasn't that impressed with the ones that... I suppose they were very simple ones to illustrate the concept.
There was a tutorial on a couple of levels. Yeah, a couple of levels after.
You could do it in one move. If you could do it in one move of the torch, then...
It needed a really difficult one in the demo.
Yeah, yeah, just to show that actually this is a dynamic puzzle. This isn't just here is the thing, shine the torch here, finished, you know.
Yep. Because some of them, you also have to reveal a picture.
Yeah.
And you do it and you just move around until it reveals and then you know you've got it.
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't immediately apparent to me how elaborate that concept could have been taken.
Yeah. But, it's a good game and it's one I shall be buying. Next, Heavy Rain.
Heavy Rain?
Heavy Rain has been patched, or will be patched next week.
Ah, so you're going through games you've got already? Using the move with them, right.
I downloaded the Heavy Rain demo, because the full patch isn't out.
Yeah.
And so I was running through the demo using it, and you know what?
Yeah.
It works. The fights feel so much better than they did before.
Because, it was rather an abstract experience, as I remember, when we were looking at Heavy Rain, just straight release, where you use a normal controller and the colour, the various shape buttons to make things happen. But now you're having to do it with actual movements and motions.
Yeah, and most of them sort of a bit arbitrary and, knocking on a door, whatever. But when you start fighting, you do sort of, you're flailing your arm around and it feels like...
Do you think Heavy Rain was a bit too early?
Yes.
Probably
I think they should have delayed,
wanted to go with this technology.
They should have delayed Heavy Rain until now.
It would have... showcased the Move.
If they had released it now, people would be saying that Move is the best thing ever.
But some balls up in timings and
Just
potentially a lost opportunity.
Heavy Rain had to release earlier.
Yeah. Okay, so that's something you would recommend then. If you're getting Move, go and get Heavy Rain as well.
Yes.
When they get
this patch. If you don't have
thing.
Heavy Rain, and shame on you because I've told you to get Heavy Rain again and again and again and again, and you don't listen to me and I don't know why I bother, then yes, buy Heavy Rain.
So if you really want to see what Move's about and put it through its paces, yeah.
Yeah.
Hmm. Okay.
And also the Ruse demo.
Ruse.
Yes, I got.
That's an RTS, isn't it?
Yeah.
How does that work with a ping pong ball on a stick? All right.
Because you've got a point and click controller and you've basically got a mouse cursor.
So. Yeah, I mean, mouse is good. Mouse is important. We like the mice. But is that how you'd want to see Move used, as just a sort of stand back away from your telly analog for a mouse?
For a system without a mouse, yes.
Does it not? You can't.
Well, you can, but the games don't support it.
Oh, right.
I think the only game that's ever supported it was Quake 4.
Right.
Which supported mouse and keyboard for a first-person shooter.
Mm.
No one else has done that on a console. I don't know why.
Yeah.
But yeah, it works really well.
Yeah.
The problem is, I don't know if I want to be waving my arms around pointing at stuff for 2-3 hours.
Yeah, I mean, the mouse has evolved as an artifact to be that particular shape and configuration over many years because it's quite a slumpy sort of position,
yeah.
Really, isn't it?
Yeah, I don't feel extended play sessions using Move are going to be that.
Conducting an orchestra, nice. Effectively, for like a couple of hours, yeah. It's going to take it out of you.
Yeah. The bizarre thing is, though, all of the really casual games that you'd expect to work on Move, I don't think worked very well. It's the hardcore cool games which I liked and thought worked.
So
I don't know if I'm imposing my viewpoint on it.
Is there a certain quality issue here then? Are these people banging out cheap and cheerful games and not doing a very good job of mapping the controls, whereas the people with the big full price games and the proper programming know-how?
It's possible.
High quality control?
Mm. I don't know. I think it could just be that the games I'm liking are by well-respected developers who understand what they're doing.
Yeah, yeah.
And I assume the others aren't.
Because, I mean, would you say now's a good time to get a Move if you're going to, or do you want to wait?
Buy it for a game, not for the technology.
Ah, I see. So there'll be a game that comes along that's absolutely brilliant and has Move designed into it from the word go. That will be the time to go for it. Because at the moment, I'm just getting the impression that there's an awful lot of this shoehorning you mentioned happening. They're trying to
shove it into loads and loads and loads of games. The first-person shooters are the ones that worries me the most.
It's just not
again,
really there.
If I'm going to be playing a first-person, I've played Halo in the past week for 7 hours at a time sometimes.
Mm, mm. Imagine trying to do that with a...
And I'm not going to be holding Move. Up a gun at the screen for that long.
No.
Yeah, same year.
So the launch lineup perhaps not as impressive as it could be.
No, but then again, that explains
why...
How long
have they had, though? They've known it's coming, and they've been
banging
the
PR drum
for years.
They had to get it out into September.
Well, yeah, but I mean, no.
They had to get it out before Kinect launches in November.
Yeah, yeah.
You see, so they basically... It's a marketing decision to launch it now.
But with a perhaps incomplete lineup of titles to begin with. I mean, I'm just very suspicious of this demo disc with the thing. I mean, you should get a full game with it, for God's
sake.
Definitely.
Well, especially considering how much it all costs.
Mm.
People say that Kinect's expensive, but when you start buying all the bits for Move, it gets more expensive than
Kinect. Well, this is it. Kinect probably will come with some full titles, I'd
imagine. It's coming with Kinect Adventures.
Hmm.
Specifically around on a what's it
called? Is that the Stroking the Tiger thing?
No, that's Kinectables.
Oh, okay. Can you stroke a tiger with this?
Yes, but it might annoy the tiger.
No, okay.
There's iPet. They've made iPet use it. But I didn't get very far with that.
Are we going to see all the old iToy stuff relaunched for this?
The only real iToy thing that's ever survived was iPet. And iPet annoyed me because it made me have to move my camera.
Yeah, right.
It was on top of my TV. I needed to move it to the bottom of the TV and point it at the floor. Therefore, meaning it would never get used.
Yeah.
Well, it was just iPet was there before, so it was just the only thing using the camera, so it was okay to say do this.
Yeah, we don't care what you do with it, what standards you set with it.
And now it wants it to be at chest height.
Yeah, yeah.
And if you don't have it at chest height, it's very, because it's got one-to-one mapping, it's very, very bad at, like you would with a Wii, you can be on any level you want. So little Timmy, who's only 3 foot tall because he's young, can use it, and the big Timmy, like you, could use it as well, who's 7 foot tall.
Yeah.
So
I'm a gentle giant.
Yeah, so you have to be adjusting the camera to make that work particularly well. It just feels like we can do this in technology, let's do it, and haven't quite realised what made the Wii what the Wii was.
So the Move is there more just because we can, rather than to fulfil a particular purpose.
Its purpose is to take people away from the Wii.
Well, I suppose we're going to be brutally honest about it. Yeah. So as a direct competitor for Wii Custom, then, how does it look?
It doesn't feel like it's moving the Wii on at all.
Bearing in mind there's the Wii Plus. So the original Wii, the original Wii wasn't very good.
It's still better than Motion Plus for accuracy.
So it wins on the accuracy front, but the titles and the lineup?
The titles aren't there, and it's so far they seem to have forgotten what the Wii was about, and they haven't moved it on. It is just a recreation of the Wii, but with better accuracy, and no one really gives a toss about the better accuracy.
Because it even comes with like the sort of nunchucks, doesn't it? You got the one with the ping pong ball.
You got the one with the ping pong ball.
Then there's the other bit.
And then,
it's got a little D-pad on the top.
Now, this I'm interested in. This is... can I see an... No, I can't see one. Oh, give me that controller.
Yeah.
Lovely bit of radio, this.
Okay.
This is effectively that side of the controller.
Oh, okay.
So it's the left-hand side.
Yeah, the left-hand side.
And you can use that to play if you wanted. Instead.
Okay, yeah.
Or only it would kill you because it's badly weighted.
Well, most games you'd need both sticks and both sets of buttons anyway if they were.
Well, yeah, but you can replace that with that. You can use a real controller and just hold it in your left hand and use the left-hand side of it.
I see.
But I'm still
not quite sure why.
I quite like using this on my right-hand side, and I think a game would do quite well to only have the trigger button there, that button there, those four, and the D-pad and that.
Ah.
I reckon you could have quite a good game with one hand.
The one-handed controller.
Yeah.
Hmm.
That's the bit I'm most excited about,
right.
And I don't know why, because I can't think of any game which could take advantage of this.
Uh-huh, fair enough. So, all in all, summing up with your Move experiences, is it going to be a grower, or
I don't know.
Are you impressed?
The problem is the games need calibrating way too often.
Oh, it loses calibration.
Yeah. If I was moving a step back or a step forwards, if you were passing the controller between people, for instance, you have to keep recalibrating it because it would lose where you were and wouldn't understand the depth perception properly.
Right. Which potentially we're thinking Kinect won't have to worry
much. Kinect should never have to worry about that.
It's got two eyes.
It's tracking you in 3D, and it knows. Of course, all of the concerns I've got here about Kinect... also valid for Kinect, and I expect to have an incredibly similar rant about it at the time. But yeah, I'm just not convinced. I think they've missed the casual.
Yeah.
They made it too hard to use, and they have not released many games to start with that convince me that it's going to work for casual. They convinced me it's going to work for some hardcore games, but not casual.
So,
which is bizarre.
I reckon if we wait till Christmas before rushing out and buying one, there'll probably be some decent titles
maybe
there and then.
I suggest waiting until next year because I don't think there's any decent titles scheduled for release.
Okay. So wait and see then.
Not ones which I don't think would be better on Kinect, like these EA Sports Active, which I reckon is going to work better with Kinect because it's tracking your whole body.
Yeah.
But then you're going to have to try them both to see.
Well, interesting. We'll see what Microsoft have to offer in due course.
Yeah. All right, should we talk about the proper games?
All right, and so then there was the other game.
Starting off with Spider-Man Shattered Dimensions.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Spider-Man game.
Yeah, I saw that on, funnily enough, that video games video show that you made me watch.
Yeah.
They were talking about that.
Sort
of kind of parallel universes of Spider-Man.
Four Spider-Men trying to collect bits of a what's-it.
Right.
Now, it's a good game.
Yeah.
It's the best Spider-Man game, probably.
What's the web swinging like?
Just the same as it is on any other Spider-Man game. They figured that out a while ago.
Yeah, that's the important bit.
Now, the thing that really, really gets me...
Mm-hmm.
It is trying so hard to be Arkham Asylum.
Oh, is it not by the same people?
No.
Oh, dear.
There's a bit where, in the tutorial, you need to pull some a block of stone or building away.
Yeah.
And you have to fire your web at it and then it's hammer to pull back.
Yeah.
It feels very much like you do using the your batarang, your bat line, zip line thing in Batman to pull things off the wall. You've got vertical takedowns off suspiciously sticking out things from the wall.
Well, I mean, Arkham Asylum was a huge success and very critically well received.
The problem is, because it's so similar on so many ways, it just makes it feel like, and it's not quite as good, it's not quite as polished, it just feels like a second-rate copy, which is hurting it because it's a good game.
So the premise is that you've got four different worlds with four different Spider-Man people.
And you basically have
people.
Different missions in each world trying to collect these things, and each one has different abilities.
Does that bring much to the experience?
The Spider-Man Noir is a stealth game.
Okay.
Normal Spider-Man's usual spring around, beat 'em up stuff. Uh-huh. So, yeah, it does. It changes
different
the play style, which is good. That works really well.
Hmm.
Whether or not all four of them are different enough is debatable, but... The art styles are, I mean, the Noir one is all black and white and 30s, and it looks gorgeous. And the normal Spider-Man one looks normally Spider-Man-y. It works, and it's good. It's just, it invites comparison with a better game. It invites comparison with one of the best games of last year, if not the best.
Which
is always a dangerous thing to do.
Yeah. Well, then the alternative is no one ever makes a superhero game again because it is finished.
Well,
it is complete. Arkham Asylum is here now.
You don't make one which obviously copies features, well, borrows, implements features which worked well in Batman.
It
just feels like they've said, right, we need this, we need this, we need this.
Yeah, someone's approached them with a checklist. That's never a great way to...
It feels like that to me.
Mm, no, yeah,
which is a shame because it is a good game.
Stifles creativity a bit.
Yeah. Yep, so that's good. Everyone should check that out if you like Spider-Man, basically.
Right. What's that, the 360? Next,
I'm
PS3?
Playing on the PS3, but it's on 360
as
well.
Okay.
Next, PlayStation Plus.
Yep.
Did something good.
Oh.
It gave me a free game. It gave me six.
You sure?
It gave me six free games.
You sure?
Yeah.
You sure you aren't thinking of Xbox Live Arcade or something?
No,
Steam?
PlayStation Plus gave me something I liked.
Wow.
I was looking at it, because the usual...
It weren't free, remember? You're paying for it.
Yeah, the usual gripe... No, yeah. But I'm getting to the point where if they keep doing this, it's going to pay for itself
rapidly.
Now, I logged into the PS3, did the usual griping, then it downloaded rubbish I didn't want to see, hadn't downloaded the latest patch when it should have, that sort of thing, and noticed that the last season of Sam & Max is free on it. So I've been downloading those.
Excellent.
And I played episode one of The Devil's Playhouse.
Right.
Which I completed.
Uh-huh. Quite short then, or are you just obsessing?
Oh, a couple of hours. These
Sam &
Max
episode
games.
Things,
yeah, the episodic a couple of hours. You can play it in an evening, which is just the right length. It would overstay its welcome if it didn't. And if it was any shorter, it would be too short. So I'm a massive fan of the Telltale stuff. And I hadn't played these because I don't bother playing them on the PC, and they hadn't released them for Xbox. And I forget why I didn't buy them on the PS3 when they came out, but I'm glad I didn't because I got them as part of PlayStation Plus.
Right.
And yes, it's just good. It's funny, well voiced, well animated, well acted.
I've always liked the Sam & Max stuff. I never really caught up with the modern stuff, though. I always remember Hit the Road, and that was about it.
Yeah, it's going back a bit. Yeah. So I completed that. I almost got all the trophies as well, but I missed one. I'm about to go back and do it.
Dear.
And I've got five more of them to do. Or is it four more? Anyway,
right.
I've got the rest of the season to do, so that's good.
Well, that's good.
So I've downloaded them, and I've got many evenings of gaming taken care of.
Sounds like a win for the PlayStation Plus system.
Oh, it does, yes. It put it in a good
mood. Yeah, too often we're quite derisive of the whole thing, but that seems like a good one.
Yeah. Next, I was playing Ruse.
Ruse. Okay.
Now, ignoring the whole move bit, Ruse is a World War II RTS where the big... gimmick is it has ruses, so you basically can sort of fake units and various orders you can put down on different areas of the battlefield which give you various bonuses, like you can see enemy movements, you can whatever.
Okay.
Or you can move faster.
Sort of stealth them up RTS?
No, it's not all stealth them up. Some of the missions are stealth them up,
okay,
but others aren't. It's World War II. Takes an awful long time before it gives you the ability to build your first unit. Awful lot of missions.
Right.
And it's very good. I'm playing on the 360. I don't know what the online's like, so I'm not going to play it online because I can't...
Zerg Rush!
Face RTSs online anymore. It's just...
Exercise in futility.
It is just so grim and so nasty.
You could just stab yourself in the leg with a fork repeatedly for much cheaper and less hassle.
I don't like online RTS players because they just optimise their strategy down to what works.
You can't blame them for that. That's the rules of the game and the system as presented. They've worked out how to win in the most efficient manner possible. Congratulations.
Yeah.
I just wouldn't want to be on the receiving end of it.
That's why I don't play. I can't take that. So I don't know about the online, but don't really care.
Fair enough.
The single player... The plot is laughable. And by laughable, I mean I'm laughing at the cutscenes unintentionally.
Oh, dear.
God, the cutscenes are terrible.
So it was bad writing?
Bad writing, bad animation. suspect, everything about it, really.
Fair enough.
Yeah. I don't know why they bothered. The game would hold together without it.
Yeah.
Just a series of missions. Do this. Yeah.
Interspersed with, I don't know, a couple of maps with arrows moving around on them. A bit like the opening credits to Dad's Army.
You probably wouldn't even need that.
Fair enough.
But yeah, apart from that, it is a good game. And if you like RTSs, at least try the demo. There's a demo on Steam, demo on both consoles.
Play
the demo, see what you think of it. It is an interesting concept, and I think it does something new. And the way when you zoom out, you're actually playing on the general's planning map. Mm. So when you pull out, it turns into the counters. The little stacks of the counters.
That's a nice touch, yeah.
Yeah, it is.
I think Supreme Commander did that, didn't it? The play field zooms out to become the map.
Yeah, but that was just sort of symbols.
Yeah.
This is a 3D, always looks good kind of thing. Yeah, definitely play it. If you like RTSs at all, play it.
Well, yeah, play for free. If nothing else, because RTSs are quite few and far between.
And
generally.
we need more and better ones. And
we've always got a soft spot on this show for RTSs.
We do not want the world thinking that StarCraft is the be-all and end-all of RTSs.
StarCraft.
There was more to it, and there are better RTSs because StarCraft didn't bother being more than a StarCraft game.
Mm. Yes.
Which you can't really fault them on.
They're very good at making StarCraft.
Yeah.
Yes.
Next, it was the DLC for Mass Effect 2 launched, Lair of the Shadow Broker.
Oh, okay. More Mass Effect 2. I'm not going to get a borrow of that for a while then.
I've completed it. It was only a couple of hours DLC. Now, I'll be careful what I say about it because it'll spoil the plot.
Mm-hmm.
And also, you won't know anything about what's going on.
No.
But all I will say about it is it's more of the same. It's very good. Acting's good. Story's good. Mm-hmm. It's just very well done as a game.
Worth the price of admission.
Definitely worth the price of admission.
Fair enough.
That's all I'll say.
Cheers.
Yep. Now, next is Plants vs. Zombies launched on Xbox Live Arcade.
Oh, right. Okay.
I'll talk about it with this title
that's seeing a new platform.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Now, it works. It's Plants vs. Zombies. Great. The big problem?
Yeah.
The iPad version of Plants vs. Zombies is better than every other version.
Well, yeah.
Because of the control.
Seems to fit the format very well. Yeah. Touch screen.
So, yeah, it's great. You can play it. It's fine. It's on your big TV. But if you've got an iPad, play the iPad version.
It's a sort of variation on the Dwarven Fortress sort of thing. You plant plants
for cash.
If you want
those.
Oh, right. Fair enough.
Everyone's completed it by now.
I haven't.
Except you.
I haven't even. I saw it around a friend's house.
You never played it?
No.
Shocking.
I don't have an iPad or a thing.
Or a PC or a Xbox.
I don't have to justify myself to you.
Yeah, I think you do. Our listeners expect it. Justify yourself. Okay, then if you're going to be quiet. Right, yes, it's good. It's on your big TV. Not as good as the iPad version, but you can't really go wrong with the game.
Mm.
And while I mention that, there's a Move game I forgot.
Okay.
Flight Control HD.
Yeah.
Yeah, which is, again, an iPhone, iPad game, which has been moved over to the PS3.
Use
Move, where you're point and clicking at the screen using the Move controller.
Ah. Uh-huh.
And I don't know why they did it. It seems like a really bad choice, because what you're doing is you are showing this game does not work as well as my phone can do it.
Yeah, I suppose they're sort of thinking that you're holding a thing that's an awful lot like those lights on sticks that people on runways wave about. I don't know.
Yeah, all I got from it was this is not as good a version of this game as I have on my phone.
Ah, dear.
Which seemed a weird choice.
Not everyone has the phone, though. Some people only have a PS3 and no iPhone.
Yeah, that's true. Maybe they should buy an iPhone. They could get better versions.
I wouldn't buy an iPhone just for the air traffic control game.
Well, no, you get Plants vs. Zombies as well.
And you get a phone as well.
Yeah, well, you do. I don't use mine.
Yes.
Right, and then there's the final game.
Yeah, go on. Get on with it.
Yeah, Halo Reach.
Ah, there we go.
The little launch of the week.
Yeah, apparently there's a new Halo game out.
Yes.
Oh, my God. I saw it everywhere.
I know. It's
mostly in Tesco's.
Yeah.
In fact, they, for one day only, they'd removed all other foods stuff. It was just Halo. It's like hundreds and hundreds of square hectares of it.
Halo Reach is a prequel to all the previous Halo games.
Oh, right. Okay.
So you're not Master Chief, although Master Chief is in it if you know where to look.
Ah.
The very last cutscene is the answer. You push right on the very last cutscene, you see him just before. Yeah.
Fair enough.
Careful what I say because I don't want to spoil anything. You are a team of not quite as good Spartans as Master Chief, who are on a planet which is being invaded by the Covenant. The planet's called Reach, and anyone who knows anything about Halo knows you do not win.
Oh dear. Is this a game with failure programmed into it right from the start?
There's no way you're going to survive this encounter.
But it's okay because previous games make it
in
better.
The first Halo game, which is the next one in the series, Halo Combat Evolved, the original Xbox game,
yeah,
there was one Spartan, and that's Master Chief.
Right. That doesn't bode well for your own personal chances of success and survival, but never mind.
Well, it starts off, the first shot of the game is your helmet, which you've just chosen from the customised character screen, in a wasteland with a bullet hole in the middle.
Oh, great. Uh-huh. Cheery, then.
This is the journey of how I die.
Oh, no. It's the whole thing told in flashback, then, is it?
Not really.
Nah.
Actually, the very, very, very last post-credits mission is brilliant. There's a bit after the mission where, after credits. It's... What can I say about Bungie Shooter?
Uh-huh.
It's one of those games which it's a almost perfect shooter. It is the state-of-the-art in shooter games.
Well, Halo's always been very big, and for good reason. Presumably they know what they do, and they do it very well.
Yeah, it feels right. And the best thing about this one is, because this is Bungie's last Halo game, and the next one's going to be multi-platform, even the PS3 people are allowed to like it on the internet, because it's Bungie, and they're going to get the next game.
Fair enough. Well, Halo's always been sort of like a bit of a standard bearer for the Xbox, really, hasn't
it? There was one
console shifter.
If there was one IP which you would associate with the Xbox, I would say it would be Halo.
Yeah, yeah.
If you ask anyone to name
that's the Xbox
game.
Shooter. Yeah, exactly.
And they are good. I know people don't like them for whatever reason. They are excellent shooters. Believe it or not, they do actually have quite a good plot.
I fall foul of. I sometimes don't like a thing just because it's popular, but it's okay to like popular things. Yeah.
Yes.
At the end of the day, I suppose. You must.
I played it through. Oh, this is terrible. I played it through on Heroic, which is there's easy, normal, heroic, and legendary difficulty levels.
Okay.
And I played it on Heroic because I thought that Matt would tease me if I didn't.
He felt it was expected.
I felt that it would make things easier.
Uh-huh.
And then I saw Matt lock on and play, and he was playing on normal.
Ah, so much kudos to you.
With some lousy excuse about how Heroic's designed for two people.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
So you're pretty hardcore then.
Apparently.
Well done. Have you completed it?
He was also moaning that him and his mate got stuck quite early on in Legendary in two player. I was playing it solo and got past that bit and got stuck on a later bit.
Right.
So this is my one time ever of being good at a shooter.
You there with the skills. Yeah.
Another one's online.
Okay, yeah. What tatters of self-esteem you'd managed to build up. Gone immediately, like dandelion seeds in the wind. Yeah.
It's very notable, this game, because it has a space combat section as well.
That's not something usual.
I thought it was an on-rails shooter. It's not. It's a float-around verbal job.
Oh, God.
And so
right.
It's going to be better space combat than the Old Republic.
Oh, blimey. The Old Republic's going with the rails shooter, isn't it?
Which is a system which was only invented for the old consoles who couldn't do anything else.
Oh dear, so that's embarrassing.
It makes me feel really happy that yeah, Halo games could do this better than.
All right, so 7 facts and figures then. Is it better than previous Halo games? And
yes.
Does it add new features? What are those like?
Yes.
How do you know you're not playing ODST?
You know you're not playing ODST because you've got helmets on that's shiny. You're tougher, you jump higher again. You are a Spartan, so you are. The best of the best, apart from the ones who are slightly better.
Right, okay.
Unlike in ODST, where you're quite fragile, you're not quite as fragile.
There's a lot of duck and cover, yeah. Is this cover-based gameplay, this?
No, it's just
proper
normal shooter.
Oh, right.
If you're playing on the harder difficulty levels, duck and cover is the way to play it.
Yeah, you're allowed to use cover. Yeah, well, it's not all chest-high walls everywhere, though, and that sort of annoying red out-of-focus health bar screen thing. Do you actually get a health meter? Whatever happened to the health meter?
Now, you've got the shield, which recharges, and a health meter, which goes up in increments, and then you need health packs to get it to go beyond that.
Okay.
Much like the ODST one.
Mm. I don't like this. Oh, my screen's a bit red. Am I near death? Am I dying? What? You know, give me a number.
Yeah, you got a nice little indicator.
Yeah.
They've added new armor abilities, the most interesting being the jetpack.
Hey, jetpack.
Yeah, which is great
fun. Tick in my box.
It's really useful on a harder difficulty level for skipping a lot of the action.
Don't want to do this fight. Fuck me, go, yeah. Bye.
It'd be really handy if I could get behind them.
Excellent.
Just up a wall and round behind them and kill them when they're not looking. Shove a grenade down their neck. Yeah, it's a brilliant game, actually.
Just good all-rounder.
Yeah, it's definitely one of the contenders for the best games of the year.
So worth all the hype and the wait.
Oh, definitely. And everyone should.
Well, that's
have...
annoying.
Why?
I hate it when anything is worth the hype.
That's
just
good.
As a principle thing. Yeah.
And I think we're going to have a 4-player playthrough on Legendary.
Ah.
Which will be fun.
I see.
Well, there's an achievement for doing Legendary solo.
We go. Solo Legendary.
Yeah.
Wow.
I got the second level done and I was crying at that stage. Yeah. Then there's the online component.
Yeah, we're looking at this website here.
Yeah, I'll mention that in a minute. Mm. Yeah, the online component is where the meat of the game will be for the long time.
Pretty much, yeah.
Because you basically got two different styles of shooter, and the Halo one is a bit lighter, a bit faster, doesn't feel quite so meaty and so visceral.
Mm, the example of the opposite sort would be Gears of War.
Yeah, something like the Gears of War.
You are basically trudging tanks, duking it out.
Yeah, it's fast moving, you're bouncing around, shooting stuff, and I've never really got into the Halo stuff that much. Modern Warfare, yeah, I've played...
Well, you're getting on a bit, aren't you?
Yeah.
You know, we're of a certain age, you know. It's the old reflex timing. It's not what it was.
Modern Warfare and Battlefield, that sort of thing. Yeah, I've been doing those. They're a lot slower, but there's an awful lot of bouncing around trying to get headshots.
Mm.
For some reason, I don't know if it's because I played the campaign on Heroic without realising that it was meant to be too hard for me. For some reason, I can do headshots now.
You've developed super first-person shooter skills, accidentally.
I developed distinctly average first-person shooter skills on 9.
That's because, never tell you the odds then, basically.
Yeah,
isn't
never
it?
Tell me it's going to be hard. I'll just do it.
Don't put Heroic on.
I wish I'd played on Legendary now. What a breeze.
Well, this is a bit hard work, but I got through it. Oh, blimey, I'm killing everyone online. Yeah.
Yeah. So I've basically spent the day playing online.
Right.
Now, online progress is measured by getting money and credits, which you spend on armor upgrades, cosmetic upgrades for your armor. So different look and feel.
You can't buy super guns and
you
things.
You can't
then.
Upgrade your abilities at all.
Oh,
it's
right.
Purely cosmetic, so you're making the armour you want.
That's a sane way to go, isn't it? Yeah.
And you've also got levels which are basically your rank. Mm-hmm. I'm currently Warrant Officer, for instance.
Yeah.
And these unlock various levels of armour that you can choose.
Right.
Now, one of the interesting things they're doing is they've got quests.
Quests?
Or should we say more like deeds, maybe. They have a week.
Come on, it's a sci-fi setting. At least call them missions.
Challenges.
Quests.
They call them challenges.
Challenges.
They have a weekly challenge and 4 daily challenges.
Oh, okay.
The weekly challenge this week was, conveniently, complete the 9 campaign missions on Hero. Heroic. Which, I did that.
Tick.
Which gives me 500 credits to help level me up.
Ah.
And then the dailies. Today's dailies, for instance, for 200 credits, there was use a sticky grenade to kill someone in multiplayer.
That seemed easy enough.
It was. It took me about 17 sticky grenades to try and get one on someone before they shot me first.
Stand still, damn it.
Which has killed 20 enemies in firefight matchmaking with a shotgun.
Are these global, or are they dished out just for your profile?
These are... Everyone gets these challenges to do in the same time.
So everyone's going to be running around with grenades, trying to stick them on each other, not using guns.
Then there's a kill 50 enemies in firefight. Uh-huh. There's the one that took most of the day, kill 125 enemies in multiplayer matchmaking.
Ew, monster.
I killed 126 in the end, because I killed the last guy twice.
Going that extra mile.
The last one was terrible. I got 124...
Yeah.
Then the rest of the enemy team, apart from one guy, quit. So just one guy was thinking, no, please stay.
We get like that with the renown ranks in Warhammer sometimes. I'm just charging around the open RVR lake looking just for anyone. I just need another few renown points.
And I basically I played all day, for a couple of hours today, because of these challenges, because there's an achievement for completing all the daily ones. These seemed relatively achievable.
So they're going to mix these up on a fairly rotating basis?
Because it gives me extra XP, effectively.
Right.
And because there was 125 enemies, by the end of it, I was getting pretty good.
Yeah. Enforced training,
driven
by achievement points.
And tomorrow, I will see what they are.
Yeah.
The firefight ones I managed to do on my own in score attack mode. Firefight is basically the horde mode type thing from ODST. They just made it better and added matchmaking, and it's a lot more customizable. You can change what the waves of enemies are.
Sort of co-op kind of thing.
Yeah. But there's score attack mode, which is a single player, online, but your scores get loaded to a leaderboard.
Oh, right.
Which means any of the firefight matchmaking challenges, you can do in that on your own. And you don't have to get a group of people together and work towards it. So, you know, killing 50 enemies was easy enough. That came naturally. Because, you know, that's what you do.
Fair enough, yeah.
Yeah, I'm very impressed by the...
They've really thought about the after sales here, haven't they? This whole web-based portal with your daily challenges and weekly things. And your incremental points.
Bungie do some really clever stuff, which they never bother you. Other people don't do. If we were to look at, for instance, Corvette... Just one of the maps. What we got here is it's showing where I've died.
Oh, it's tracking your gameplay on the website. You set up a profile and logged in, obviously, and it's
So it's showing where I've died in the game.
Want to stay clear.
That's where I've killed people, actually.
That ramp.
I've died. I've basically died everywhere.
Oh, you're all over the place. I noticed that most of your kills occur on one particular ramp. Is that their spawn point?
Where am I?
Are you spawn camping?
Oh, it's down. Yeah, no, that's
that's where they come out when they start.
No, this is against real people.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, they respawn.
It just naturally sort of ends up on that platform over there.
Interesting.
People go through altitude.
I suppose they can aggregate this and find out globally where the most dangerous spot on any level is.
Yeah, that's what they were doing in the beta.
Of course, this is. Oh, I see. Yes, this is beta. Metrics gathering, isn't it? That they then just decided to turn into a little player.
They did it for the last version of the game as well.
That's very clever.
And so you can look and you can see, right, this is where I'm dying, this is where I'm killing people, I need to work on that. You can save...
This is already all in there because they've been using this internally.
Every one of your matches is automatically saved internally, which after you finish it, you can then save it locally, and so you can replay your match from any camera position with a free camera. So you can see what's going on. You can upload them online so other people can see it. It really does give you sort of a meta game for making itself better and reliving moments. Which a lot of games don't bother. Uncharted 2, for instance, added a mode.
Imagine this kind of thing will inform patching as well. They discover that there's something slightly unbalanced about a particular
map. If they find
that
there was a kill zone in a map, they will change it.
They'll change the map slightly to not have it. Balance it up more.
This is also what Red versus Blue use to do it, because it records what you do.
The machinima
it's really
stuff.
Good for the machinima stuff. And other games like Uncharted 2 have started adding in tools. Uncharted 2 got it a bit wrong because there was no rewind, which apparently is a massive killer, but all these features which are really, really useful in Halo, other games are just starting to pick up, which Halo's had since 97 or so. There's also Forge mode, which is a level designer and gameplay type designer. Of the last one came a game called Griffball, which is basically a sort of a game of pick up football, run with it type game. But the ball explodes after a while.
Fair enough.
And that came out of the Forge mode stuff. And so they've made it so you can customize what you're doing and choose what you're doing so that you can make more emergent type gameplays. And if they get good ones, they'll put them into rotation so people can play them whenever. It's really a long-term platform thing.
Yeah, very much more than just the game, isn't it? There's all sorts of support to go with it, the website, all this tracking stuff.
Don't forget the Halo 3, a game which came out in 2007, is still one of the best-played games on Xbox. And there's a reason for this. It's because Bungie understand what people want, and it's really great that their next game's going to be multi-platform, and please can they make it cross-platform?
I suppose if anyone can do it, they might be able to.
They may have the clout to do it, because...
it's a very political thing, isn't it? It's not really about the technology at all. I'm sure the technology is fairly straightforward.
Don't forget, the Valve only got what they wanted on the PS3 by basically holding over a barrel and saying, we're not coming to the PS3 unless you do this. And now they're doing the same thing with Microsoft, saying, we think the PS3 is better, and we're going to keep saying it's
people
out there
fighting
for this. So hopefully Bungie will be able to do something similar
and
get something a bit bigger for everyone else.
Excellent.
Let me just check the global stats. It's a Sunday evening at 8 o'clock UK
8 o'clock
time.
Sunday UK time, GMT.
And there are 746,283 players playing.
And this is like in the week of launch, is it?
Yeah.
So, I don't know, I was expecting that to be higher somehow. How many did it sell, do you know? Have we got any sales figures for it yet?
Millions.
Mm. Yeah.
Yeah, but it's one time on a Sunday. It's still not that late on a... Well, for, in America.
Yeah, for concurrency, that's pretty damn good, actually.
Yeah, that's concurrent players. Yeah,
I mean, you typically multiply that by about five to get a subscription value for MMOs. You know. So, yeah, that's pretty damn good. Sort of 3 or 4 million at least.
Yeah, it's the biggest entertainment launch of the year so far.
Mm, yeah. Which I suppose we'll see all sorts of news about it being awesome in the months ahead.
Although you should always expect that games can be the biggest launch per year because the box price is a lot more than a ticket sale for a movie.
Right.
Which no one ever mentions.
No.
If you sell 100 of games and 100 movies, you're going to make more with 100 games. It's going to be a bigger launch.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Anyway, yes, so I'm quite happy about Reach and everyone should play it. And I think the Thursday evening thing might kick off with a couple of games of Reach for the next couple of weeks.
Ah, the console club.
Yeah.
There you go.
So, if Vandy wants to buy it, no pressure.
Stop pressuring individual listeners into buying stuff just to play with you. That's abusing the power our show confers on us. Or something.
It is, actually. Yes. Sorry, Andy.
Anyway.
Yes, anyway, yeah, so that'd be all the games I played.
Right. Should we do a Twitter question?
No.
Because you didn't do one.
No, I forgot.
I forgot to do a Twitter question. Sorry.
Although, to be fair, we did go to lunch on Friday, and I said, I must think of the Twitter question, then completely forgot about it for the rest of the day.
Yeah, I thought you said that, and I thought, all right, he's on the case. No. Yeah. But since we're up to 1 hour 40 or so already,
yeah,
probably ought to stop there then. So what did you learn this week?
Apparently I'm a Nazi.
And I'm a Nazi as well. So with that, we'll see you next time.
Goodbye.
What?